Hello and welcome to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Robert Johnson, a York Rite Mason and Knight Templar. Well, I have a fan of the show who, in his own right, has a good following as well, Brother Travis Apollonius, who, like me, is a Freemason and interfaith minister. In addition to this, he has a few blogs, which are all good reads, and you can visit his website at www.travisapollonius.com. That's www.travisapollonius.com. But first, I have an original paper that I wrote, which I'll read to you now. The Real Jacob's Ladder. Jacob's ladder is said to have come to Jacob in a dream, by which he saw the way to heaven, angels ascending a ladder with rungs named Faith, Hope, and Charity, and as we are told, Charity being the greatest of these, for it extends into the boundless realms of eternity. Let us break this down into some simple concepts. First, Jacob is a character from the Holy Bible. Second, that we are talking about heaven, that spiritual place to where all Masons hope to have a home. First, realize that heaven, as it is written in the King James Bible version, is a word that is not the correct translation per se. Its original meaning meant the sky or openness. In King James's wisdom, he sought to keep those that were of unroyal blood in the dark by the most common of ways, the same way in which whites kept Africans in the days of slavery, illiterate. King James therefore commissioned the use of more elegant words, like heaven in place of sky. This doesn't seem to do much, but over time, you all now think of heaven as some mythical place like Valhalla, where your every wish is your command. Well, like Jacob, you'll need to wake up. The next thing we need to look at is what exactly is meant by heaven. Well, we know it should be a place of serenity, a place of good things, a place that feels like paradise. What do you do when it is discovered that heaven is here on earth, when we find ourselves so comfortable and so content and can easily see the beauty of the day or night and in the nature of everything around you? This is heaven. The ladder represents something else. The ladder is a metaphor for what you must accomplish in your life in order for your mind to be elevated to the point of revealing heaven unto thine eyes. You must have faith that this is within your power. And yet faith is lost in revelation. You must have hope that you will achieve the Christ-like state, which is then lost in fruition. And finally, charity, which as stated above, moves forward throughout all time, similar to the butterfly effect. You see, charity is the greatest of these things. Your ability to give up all things for the potential easing of someone else's life is not only a gift unto them, but one unto you as well. The constant practice frees you from the superfluities of the mind and necessarily sets ablaze the indented tessel. You need not these things any longer. This is even written in the Dead Sea Scrolls and the parchments that which were deemed unworthy by Nicene Council, the Gospel of Thomas number 17. No matter what your personal religion is, we can agree that Jesus was a teacher at least. And Jesus said, "I will give you what no eye has seen, what no ear has heard, and what no hand has touched, what has not arisen in the human heart." Meaning that you need to look in the last place to find heaven, in yourself. Again, from the Gospel of Thomas number 3, Jesus said, "If your leaders say to you, 'Look, the Father's kingdom is in the sky,' then the birds of the sky will precede you. If they say to you, 'It is in the sea,' then the fish will precede you. Rather, the Father's kingdom is within you, and it is outside of you." This kingdom is heaven, is it not? I will leave you on this. Jacob's ladder is but a revelation unto Jacob, a how-to guide that happened upon his sleepy mind. Its lesson is well learned but not understood in whole by anyone. Many have come to this revelation and its name in other religions and spiritual views are different, and the stories that surround it are also different. However, the idea remains the same. You are not your possessions or even your body. You are something else, a soul, a chakra, a blazing star that is yet to be awakened. Reverend Kirby Hensley once told a story about how he had had enough of these different churches. He sought the advice of mystics and yogis. They told him a story, which was loosely this. The sages took man's awakened immortal being away. One of them asked where they should hide it. The first responded, "At the bottom of the ocean." "No," the others thought, "for man will surely find it there, and easily." The second suggested that they hide heaven on another world. They again said, "No, for man will surely venture into the stars and find it." "Well then, where should we hide it?" the second asked. The third and wisest said, "We shall hide it in the last place man will look, for he is too unwilling to ever look there. We will hide it within man. We as Freemasons learned these lessons, we talked the talk, and now it's time to walk the walk. We are making the world a better place every day by giving all we can. We are teaching brothers the great absolutes of our minds, consciousness, and the nature of all the world around us. Let us not let the common man fall behind. Let us lift them up so that they too will become inspired and perhaps join the fellowship we hold so dear, Freemasonry. As always, feedback is welcome. I also now want to let you know that soon I'll be taking in an effort to start a nonprofit charity based in my home state of Illinois. More on this as it develops, and currently I'm in the very beginning stages, mission statements, working on board members, etc. I hope you all check out the Midnight Freemason, week to week. A piece I wrote will be featured on the 7th, which is today if you're listening on Monday. Also, the next time I'll be on the Midnight Freemason will be on the 28th. I will also be on in between those dates in another article as well. And now, a bit of somewhat concerning information. The Grand Lodge Spotlight segment will be suspended for a while. There is an issue which needs to be resolved before further segments will be aired. Some Grand Lodges feel I need to get some support from my Grand Lodge before they feel comfortable allowing me to speak about their lodge. As I thought about it, I decided, hey, having Grand Lodge support isn't a bad idea. And rightly so that they would be concerned. So I am currently discussing things with my Grand Lodge, and there is always a possibility in which they may not like the show, and if that's the case, I may even have to stop the show. I'm not sure how it'll turn out, but I don't think it will come down to that. But I just wanted to let you all know so that you're on the up and up. This week's famous Freemason is none other than Meriwether Lewis. The scribe on the door to Virtue Lodge No. 44 of the ancient free and accepted Masons in Albemarle County, Virginia, recorded on December 31, 1796 that Lieutenant Meriwether Lewis, on furlough from his Western Pennsylvania post in the U.S. Infantry, was recommended as a proper person to become a member. Less than 1 month later, on January 28, 1797, he was elected to membership, initiated as an entered apprentice, and given his apron. On the following evening, he was admitted to the second or fellowcraft degree, and without further examination, promoted at sight, that is, by unanimous ballot, as a Master Mason. Such meteoric progress through the first 3 degrees of Masonry signified confidence on part of the most prominent men of Albemarle that the 23-year-old Lewis was similarly destined for moral, civic, and political leadership. A little more than 2 months later, on the 2nd or 3rd of April, members of the Door to Virtue Lodge conferred upon Lewis the degree of Past Master Mason. At the same meeting, two other leading Virginians were elevated to the same status. They were Peter and Samuel Carr, nephews of Thomas Jefferson, whose son-in-law, Governor Randolph, was also in attendance. On October 31st, 1799, Lewis was exalted to the sublime degree of Royal Arch, Super Excellent Master at Widow Sun Lodge in Milton, Virginia, a few miles southeast of Charlottesville. On that occasion, he was given a Royal Arch apron, which is now at the Missouri Historical Society. In 1801, Lewis, who had been promoted to the rank of captain in the late 1799, became the private secretary to President Jefferson, and in June of 1803 received his official orders as commander of the expedition to explore the Northwest. Lewis no doubt carried his apron during his preparatory travels as a wayfaring Mason would have. There is reason to believe, for instance, that he attended a lodge in Pittsburgh while awaiting the completion of the barge from July 15th until August 31st, 1803. If he carried a Masonic apron on his expedition to the Pacific, which might have been expected of a Mason of his rank understanding such a hazardous mission, he did so in total secrecy. 2 years after the corpse's discovery return, Lewis, then governor of Louisiana Territory, was instrumental in establishing the first lodge in that city, and on September 16, 1808, by the authority of Pennsylvania Grand Lodge, he was installed as a master of the St. Louis Lodge No. 111. In September of the following year, he left St. Louis on what was to be the final journey of his life, first relinquishing his master's chair to Frederick Bates, the secretary of the territory and acting governor, during Lewis's absence. It was at Lewis's encouragement, no doubt, that William Clark joined the new lodge in St. Louis. Late in January 1804, Clark copied into his journal a definition of the five senses from Owen's Dictionary, which was the company's small reference library. The subject was entirely out of context with the expedition's business at the moment, but the paragraph reads like a precious piece of catechism for an entered apprentice. Clark's certificate confirming that the status dated September 18, 1809 is at the Missouri Historical Society. His apron is at the lodge in St. Charles, Missouri. His funeral service was on September 1st, 1838. opened with a full Masonic burial rite. That was written by Joseph Musselman, 9-4, September of 2004, and was revised November of 2011. And that information was actually provided by a website called lewis-clark.org, which I encourage you to check out. There are some really neat pictures, especially one of Lewis's Masonic aprons. Now, in an interesting side note, Meriwether's death has been a huge debate. He was said to have committed suicide by shooting himself in the face with a 69 caliber black powder horse gun. And then apparently that didn't do the job, so he reloaded it and shot himself in the chest. And suicide remains the cause of death. On September 3, 1809, Lewis set out for Washington, D.C., where he hoped to resolve issues regarding the denied payment of drafts he had drawn against the War Department while serving as the first American governor of Louisiana Territory. Some accounts say he carried his journals with him for delivery to his publisher. Lewis intended to travel to Washington by ship from New Orleans, but changed his plans while en route down the Mississippi from St. Louis. He decided to make an overland journey via the Natchez Trace and then east to Washington. The Natchez Trace was the old pioneer road between Natchez, Mississippi and Nashville, Tennessee. On October 10, 1809, Lewis stopped at the inn on the Natchez Trace called Grinder's Stand, about 70 miles southwest of Nashville. After leaving dinner, he went to his bedroom. In the pre-dawn hours of October 11th, the innkeeper heard gunshots. Servants found Lewis badly injured from multiple gunshot wounds, including one to the head. He died shortly after sunrise. While modern historians generally accept his death as a suicide, there is some debate. Priscilla Grinder, the tavern keeper's wife, claimed Lewis acted strangely the night before his death. She said that during dinner, Lewis stood and paced about the room talking to himself in a way that one would speak to a lawyer. She observed his face, too flush as if it had come on him in a fit. After he retired for the evening, she continued to hear him talking to himself. At some point in the night, she heard multiple gunshots, and what she believed was someone calling for help. She claimed to be able to see Lewis through the slit in the door crawling back to his room. She never explained why at the time, and she didn't investigate further concerning Lewis's condition or the source of the gunshots. The next morning, she sent for Lewis's servants. They found him wounded and bloody, with part of his skull gone, but he lived for several hours. Priscilla Grinder's testimony is held as a point of contention from both sides of the murder-suicide debate. The murder advocates point to five conflicting testimonies as evidence that hers is fabricated, and the suicide advocates point to her testimony as proof of suicide. The only doctor to examine Lewis's body died in 1848. He reported that Lewis appeared to have died by the hand of an assassin. Lewis's descendants have retained that report. When Clark and Jefferson were informed of Lewis's death, both accepted the conclusion of suicide. His mother and relatives contended it was a murder. In later years, a court of inquiry explored whether they could charge the husband of the tavern keeper with Lewis's death. They dropped the inquiry for lack of evidence or motive. From 1993 to 2010, many of Lewis's kin, through his sister Jane, as he had no children, sought to have the body exhumed for forensic analysis to try to determine whether the death was a suicide. A Tennessee coroner jury in 1996 recommended exhumation. Since Lewis is buried in a national park, the National Park Service must approve. They refused the request in 1998, citing possible disturbance to the other bodies of more than 100 pioneers buried nearby. In 2008, the Department of Interior approved the exhumation, but that decision was rescinded in 2010 upon policy review, and the department has stated that the last decision is final. It is making improvements to the gravesite and visitor facility. So what do you guys think? Drop me a line at the Facebook, or you can email me at wcypodcast@gmail.com. And that's it for this week. Remember to check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Whence Came You. Add us to your circle on Google+, and email me at wcypodcast@gmail.com. Visit the website for everything Whence Came You, including links to the Whence Came You apps, which let you listen to streaming, gives you access to some of the papers, and of course a mobile Masonic wallpaper every week. That's wcypodcast.blogspot.com. Until next week, for Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.